This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and I'm the TOS editor for the network. With me today, as always, is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really good.
Yeah.
So we've got a cool announcement. We were recently chosen as finalists for the Parsec Awards.
Mm-hmm. Best new podcaster / team.
So we're going to be down at Dragon Con for the awards Sunday, August 31st. So if anybody's around the Atlanta area or are traveling to the Atlanta area that weekend, stop by Dragon Con and maybe you'll run into us.
Yeah, I'm assuming if most of our listeners are in Atlanta during that period, they'd probably be at Dragon Con, right? I mean, that's the place to be.
I imagine so.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're there, let us know.
All right, so Mike, we're finally going to do what we've talked about for many months now. We're going to talk about aspect ratios. We don't have our own show yet dedicated to it, but I guess this is like a preview, a sneak peek.
This is our assignment Earth for our aspect ratio show, I guess you could
okay.
say. Yeah, for those of you who don't follow us on Twitter or whatever, or for those of you who do follow us on Twitter, who may wonder why we use the hashtag CTS2 all the time, as these things happen on Twitter, you know, someone says something and someone says something else, and then someone says, I want to do a show, a podcast all about aspect ratios just to prove that it can be done, you know. Like a weekly show on aspect ratios. And then someone else says, oh, I would do that show with you. And then it just builds momentum and goes from there. and I mean, we came up with a title, C.TS:1, CTS2-1, because that's how ratios work and everything like that. And yeah, if you're, you know, interested in aspect ratios and stuff like that, you may find this particular episode of Standard Orbit to be interesting. If you don't know what an aspect ratio is and don't care, this may be the most boring episode of Standard Orbit you will ever hear.
I don't know. I spent like 15 or 20 minutes explaining frame rates to somebody at a party this weekend, and she was just like, you've opened my eyes to a whole new world.
See? And hopefully that's what we do here, you know? That's what I'm hoping for. But I don't know. I'm a huge aspect ratio nerd, and this is quite possibly going to be the nerdiest podcast in the history of Trek FM. So be prepared. But
I'm ready.
Okay. So before we get started, you know, what is an aspect ratio? For those people who don't know, it is quite simply the ratio of screen width to height. So it's essentially describing the shape of the screen that you're looking at when you're watching a movie or TV show. For example, standard television is 1.33:1 or 4:3. Which is why we are doing this on episode 43 of Standard Orbit. See, it's
clever.
All, yeah.
He's been planning this for a while.
Yeah, just a while. But 1.33:1. That's the ratio of television now. And you know, you'll notice.
Then.
And you'll notice, like, you know, HD TVs are wider. You know, that is 1.78:1. So what we're talking about is the first number is the width compared to the ratio of the height. The height being 1, the width being some other number. So as the screens get wider, the number gets higher. Okay?
Right.
That's the basics of it. So why do we care? I don't know why you care, Drew, but I can tell you why I care.
I care. I mean, to me, aspect ratios are important. It's something that I never really noticed until going to see Star Wars Special Edition. And I was like, it's so much bigger. Like, there's so much stuff happening on the sides that I've never seen before. And then I don't remember how I looked it up because it was only 97. I think my neighbor who went with me to the Special Edition explained, well, you know, things are widescreen. You know, you can get laser discs with widescreen and you can see more of the sides and stuff. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever. This has changed my entire life.
Yeah, because it's like all of a sudden these movies, which you've memorized, you know, backwards and forwards, have new stuff in them that you'd never known about. I mean, like, one of the big revelations to me in Star Wars was actually in Empire Strikes Back when they're in the asteroid field and that asteroid comes and hits the tower on the Star Destroyer, and then they cut to Darth Vader talking to the three dudes over the radio, and the one guy goes, ah, and disappears.
Yeah.
In the original pan and scan of Empire, you'd never see that guy. It's like, yeah. Whoa, they just killed that guy. Oh my God, that's hardcore. You know?
For me, it was, I remember the first time that I saw it in the Special Edition, which was when Leia is being interrogated by Vader, you know, in the hallway. And he's like, you're a part of the Rebel Alliance and a traitor. Take her away. And then in the next shot, Vader's talking to that Imperial officer. I always wondered where the heck that guy came from. Because it's just like, he turns a corner and there's a guy next to him. That guy was there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like, and this is also gets into why, you know, some people may still be confused why occasionally you'll be watching a movie and there will be black bars on the top and bottom of your screen, like Star Trek movies, for example. That's because the aspect ratio of that movie is wider than the aspect ratio of your television, so they shrink the picture down to fill the whole screen. And like the first time that this was described to me or that I read about it was in a TV guide when they were going to be showing 2001 letterboxed on I don't know what channel, like TBS or something like that. And they were saying, like, we're going to show the movie in, you know, pan and scan at like 7 o'clock, and then at midnight it's going to be letterboxed. And then they had a thing in there explaining what it was, and I'm
so
like,
so you didn't call and complain,
right? And I'm like, wow, this is really cool that they're doing this, you know. And I'm like, but is this a typo? Why are they showing the letterboxed one at midnight? Clearly that's the one that everyone's going to want to see. That's weird to me. And then when I would describe it to people, people would be like, you know, why are there black bars? And I'm like, wow, people don't like this. What is wrong with people? I never understood it. And it's like this weird thing where, to me, like, it's always been a very straightforward, simple, you know, and logical concept. And, you know, people with HD TVs are certainly starting to catch up. I imagine most people listening to this podcast, for example, are like, yes, letterboxing is the best. But there's this weird part of the population, like a huge part of the population, who's just like, I don't like the black bars. Get rid of them. And that is so bizarre to me. But
I had a lot of arguments as a teenager with people like, well, you see less of the screen. No, you don't. You see more.
Yeah. And I remember having an uncle who, you know, he would say that. I'm like, no, you see more. And he was just one of those guys who could never lose an argument. He's like, well, what about the fact that you lose resolution and, you know, blah, blah. And I'm like, you've got a point there, honestly. That is a good point. I would sacrifice resolution for composition. So,
yes.
So anyway, what does this have to do with Star Trek? In terms of, like, aspect ratios, to me, though, the reason why I care about them so much, I mean, part of it is just sort of this thing where it's like it was one of the first, you know, sort of filmmaking concepts that I understood, you know, growing up. But aside from that, now, the reason why I'm still obsessed with aspect ratios is, I think, mainly because I see them as sort of being, I mean, movies are such a broad field. You know, you can do so many things in movies, and you can tell stories in so many different ways and everything like that. And the aspect ratio, to me, is like one of the few sort of limitations or quite literally like boundaries that you have in terms of movies. And that screen and the shape of that screen, it's like you can do anything that you want on that screen, but it needs to fit inside this box, you know? And there's just something about that. Like, we are going to create a new world, you know, or a new civilization, if you prefer, or whatever, you know, a new galaxy. And yet everything that we do has to exist inside of this little box.
This and, window,
yeah,
if you will.
Right. And you can do whatever you want inside there. But once you step outside, you know, it's the real world. And there's just something about that which I like. You know, it fascinates me. So. So what does this have to do with Star Trek? Star Trek is one of those weird cases where aspect ratios are, you know, they're very standardized. You know, the industry has standards and there's a set of, you know, like, let's say three main aspect ratios that almost all movies fit into or TV shows or whatever. And yet Star Trek has a weird history with aspect ratios. And there's a lot of exceptions in the Star Trek universe. So it's kind of a good, you can easily look at sort of the variations and the interesting aspects of aspect ratios by looking at Star Trek. So that's what we're doing today. Let's just start at the very beginning with the original series. Right. Now, television back in the day, up until basically HDTV, had an aspect ratio of 1.33 to 1, or 4 to 3 across. The reason for that is because that's what the aspect ratio of movies were back in the day. They were 1.3.
Like Gone with the Wind and Wizard of Oz and stuff.
Yeah. Technically, those were 1.37 to 1, but the difference was so small that it was basically the same thing. And I mean, TVs naturally, I think, are much more rounded, you know? Like like a video tube should theoretically be a circle. That would make the most sense, right?
That'd be hard to film.
it would be hard to film in some ways. But, you know, they were like, everyone's used to 1.33. You know, we're going to be showing movies on this television set and everything like that. So let's make it 1.33 to 1. And basically the way that they did that is they kind of cropped the edges so you just didn't see the whole picture, you know. Now Star Trek was shot, the original series was shot on 35 millimeter film, which has the native 1.33 to 1 ratio, and then it was, you know, broadcast on TV. But the thing about old TVs, and really going up to basically up until you get to HD TVs, was because of that cropping, and also because of sort of variations in the TVs and the fact that it wasn't, you know, as standardized as it is now, you were always losing picture. So like they would protect the image, and when they shot it, they would have two borders around the image. One was action safe, which, you know, said like, okay, chances are everyone is going to be seeing the stuff which is inside of this box, but don't put anything important outside of the box because people probably aren't going to see it. And then they had title safe, which was an even smaller box inside where they said, okay, some TVs are going to be really bad and the action safe stuff is going to be, you know, you're not even going to be able to see that. But title safe, you know, everybody should have this part of the image, and you can stick your titles in there and not have to worry about cutting them off, so people aren't going to be watching Tar Tree, you know? They're always going to be seeing Star Trek. So,
or you definitely don't want to cut off the end of your advertising if you've got on-screen advertising.
Which is probably more important, yes, yes. Good point. So now that we have modern technology, you know, as the years have progressed, you know, TV technology got better and better, and less of that image was being cropped. So now when you're watching the original series in HD, you're seeing the entire image which was filmed. So if you look at, if you're watching an episode, or if you look at screen caps and everything like that, you'll see that there's a lot of empty space on the borders of the image. Like whenever there's a close-up, unless they're trying to do like an extreme close-up with people, you know, where you're basically just getting their face, like you'll see, you know, a good few inches of headroom, depending on how big your TV is, you know, to make sure that they're not cutting off people's heads. You know, and, yeah, and it's almost like, I mean, it's the type of thing where you don't really notice it unless you're looking for it. But if you're looking for it, you're like, wow, there's really nothing going on around the sides of that picture.
Well, what's interesting to me and something that I notice is like news programs still shoot, you know, like standard definition safe. So there's really like, sure, it fills your screen, but there's nothing going on beyond the 4x3 crop that they're going to have in the middle of the screen.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you see that on sports broadcasts too, where like they'll have the little bugs in the corners,
mm-hmm,
but they don't
go
out.
The bugs go all the way to the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's kind of what's going on there. But it is kind of cool how now, you know, we are getting to see everything that was shot. And it's not the type of thing where you're not supposed to see that stuff. I mean, they were protecting for everything, but it was more like, let's shoot this image, but let's also keep in mind that people probably aren't going to be seeing the stuff on the sides.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, in the Next Generation one, there's a lot of instances where they show you why it can't be widescreen by showing you all the stuff that's outside the action safe area. So they actually do, I think, do a little bit of cropping, even in TOS, to make sure that you don't see stuff that's outside the frame.
They probably do. Yeah, that's probably true. And, you know, like on the Next Generation DVDs, I don't know what they did for the Blu-rays, but for the DVDs where, you know, that show was transferred to video and then edited on video before being output. So they had already done all of the stuff which was designed for being shown on a standard definition TV. And now that you know, we are seeing more, there's numerous instances in the Next Generation era shows where when you're watching the DVDs or the Netflix versions or whatever, you can see boom mics, you know, at the mm-hmm. very top edge or maybe a light stand or something like that. You don't really see that too much in the original series. No. I think because I think they're a bit more conscious of it. And I think probably when they were doing the editing on the original series, they were watching it on film. So if they had seen a microphone or stuff, they'd be like, there's a microphone there. Whereas by the time the editors and the post-production people on Next Gen got the footage, it had already been processed to the point that when they were watching it on their TV, they wouldn't have seen that microphone, which we do see now.
Right.
You know? So the animated series, it was also done in 1.33 because, you know, it was done for television and it was animated and everything like that instead of being shot on, you know, video and stuff. So you are probably seeing more on those things than they did back in the 70s as well. So, in 1979, Star Trek makes the leap to the big screen, right? Mm-hmm. And with Star Trek the Motion Picture. And they wanted to try to make the movie as epic as possible and everything like that. So, with movies, there's essentially, to simplify it, two aspect ratios. One is 1.85 to 1, which is very close to the shape of your standard HD TV today. And the second is 2.39 to 1, which is anamorphic widescreen, which is CinemaScope or whatever. And that's what the Star Trek movies essentially were shot at. We'll get into that in a second. But that's what, you know, Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, most of the big blockbusters you see today, they were in that ratio. And that's where when you're watching movies on your HD TV today, you'll see black bars. It's on the top and bottom. It's because it's in that wide ratio. And the thing about CinemaScope is it always kind of signaled big screen. You know, the curtains on the screen would open up even further, and it would just be this huge wide image which would practically surround you and, you know, just encompass all of your senses. And it's sort of like the signal of a big screen filmmaking adventure. And that's obviously what they wanted to do with Star Trek the Motion Picture.
what's interesting to me is that they made the screens wider. Like he said, at first, TVs were made to show the aspect ratio of films that were shown in theaters. But then when people, the movie theaters, decided to start making things wider so that you would get, it would be more theatrical. And then we made our TVs wider. And yeah. I'm still waiting for the surround screen to come back. Stuff you can't replicate at home.
Well, they are. There's, I forget what it's called, but there is a thing where it is sort of like a three-paneled screen. And I guess the first movie which is going to be released in that format is The Maze Runner. So,
okay.
Yeah, they are definitely doing that. And that's
so they're actually trying that again. That's great. Yeah,
and that's why you see things like D-Box, you know, where your seats mm-hmm. move. And I heard there's some new thing that they did for Transformers 4, where there's only like one theater in LA that has it, but it's essentially like a motion simulator, and it has like water effects and smoke
what?
Effects and everything. It sounds pretty cool, actually, but I'd be curious. And that's always, you know, there's always sort of that escalation, you know, surround sound in theaters. Okay, mm-hmm. well, now let's put surround sound in the home and, you know, 3D. I mean, that was the reason for 3D, you know, coming up. Another reason to get people out of their homes and into theaters. And now, I mean, well, I've got a 3D theater or 3D screen sitting across the room from me. So
yeah, but you don't have the, now they're like, okay, surround sound with speakers in the ceiling. So, you know, try to do that at home.
Well, they just announced the first Dolby Atmos receiver is going on the market.
Oh, jeez.
Later this year.
Poor theaters.
They just can't win, right? So Star Trek, the
motion picture.
Yeah, yes. Obviously was shot in widescreen, anamorphic, 2.39:1. And by the way, this is like my thing. This is what's going to be on my tombstone when I die. It's going to say Mike R. Schindler, even though that's not my middle initial. it's 2.39:1, damn it. Because it's not
2.35, like I say every time.
Right. It was 2.35 up until like the mid-70s, and then they changed it, and now it's 2.39. And people sometimes acknowledge the change and say, yeah, 2.40. It's not 2.40. It's 2.39. I don't care how you round it. It's still 2.39. It will always be 2.39. Well, maybe not, but it is now, and it has been for the past 40 years, so... 2.39:1, okay? 2.39:1. All right.
Got it.
And that's what Star Trek the Motion Picture was. Now, what's interesting about that is, you know, obviously, like we were saying before, when you put it onto a normal 4x3, 1.33:1 TV, the image needs to be cropped. You know, you lose almost half of the picture unless you letterbox it. And back mm-hmm. in 1979, people weren't letterboxing, you know, so you would lose that image. And that really was a reason to see it on the big screen, because you get to see the full picture and the full composition, whereas at home, you're only seeing like half of the picture. And they actually used that to their advantage with the motion picture, because in 1983, when the movie, I think, debuted on ABC, they decided to make it special and release an extended cut with a bunch more footage. This isn't the director's cut that we're talking about. This is something that Robert Wise, the director, and all of the filmmakers had nothing to do with. This was all the stuff where they were like, that scene doesn't work. We definitely can't put that in the movie because yeah. that's terrible. That doesn't make any sense. He's wearing a different colored spacesuit in that scene. Oh, well, obviously we can't do that. And they stuck all this footage, like 12 minutes worth of footage, back into the movie. And they showed it on TV, and then they released it on home video. And that was the version that you could the only version that you could get on videotape from like 1983 onward. Except they couldn't release that in widescreen. When they decided to, I think it was when Star Trek V came out, they decided to re-release the original movies in letterbox for the first time on Laserdisc. You know, you could finally see the full mm-hmm. image. with Star Trek the Motion Picture, they couldn't do their precious extended cut. They needed to do the theatrical cut. And the reason was because one of those scenes which they cut out, which shouldn't have been in the movie in the first place, that they stuck back in, you could actually see the edge of the set on the thing. And when you cropped it, you could crop out the edge of the set. So in that instance, you could be like, well, we can stick this in the movie because you can't see. But for the widescreen version, you know, no. I mean, there you that's yeah, all of a sudden Los Angeles.
They're scaffolding because it was they were going to make a matte painting of it.
Right. So that version has never and will never exist in widescreen.
Yeah, unless they decide to go back and, you know, digitally matte.
Right.
A digital matte painting or something.
Which they...
But the scene is pointless, so who cares?
Yes, yes. Just like that cut. So luckily that cut has sort of now... It basically doesn't exist anymore.
Lost to time.
Yes. Although that cut is the first Star Trek thing I ever saw, that extended...
That almost turned you off of Star Trek forever, yeah. So...
Yeah, and
let's not give it too much credit.
No. But when we do talk about cropping or whatever, you know, it's called pan and scan, just in case anyone, in case we refer to that later on, which we probably will, you know, people know what we're talking about. So there's the first
week. Because not only do they crop the sides sometimes, but sometimes they'll actually, like, move the square frame across the widescreen to keep something in frame.
Right.
It's they don't do that very often.
No. And like, that instance that we were talking about in The Empire Strikes Back, where the guy dies and his transmission goes away, in the original pan and scan version, they just had it cropped so that you never see the guy. But when they redid it for 1993, I think it was, when they re-released the movies or whatever, 95,
mm-hmm.
they actually started on that guy and then panned over to everyone else so that you did see it when it was in 4x3, so... There's actually an art to it. There's a lot of directors back then who would want to personally supervise the pan and scan transfer of their movies to make sure that they wouldn't be butchered even more than they already were being butchered. But, yeah, it's interesting, but evil for the most part. Okay, so Star Trek's 2 through 5 were all shot in the same format as the motion picture, anamorphic widescreen. However, they were released in 70mm as well as 35mm. Now,
okay.
The motion picture was going to be released in 70mm. That was definitely the thing to do back then and certainly something that they wanted to do for a movie as epic as the motion picture. However, they ran out of time. They didn't even have time to finish editing the movie or do the effects, you know, because they needed to get it out by that release date. So the motion picture was only released in 35mm. Because they never had time to do the 70mm prints. But Star Trek's 2 through 5 did have 70mm prints. And the thing about 70mm is it has a slightly different aspect ratio than 35mm anamorphic. Now, to go back a little bit, for those people who don't know, 35mm film is the standard which was used for, you know, the better part of the last century. Pretty much if you were going to see a movie... At any time in your life up until like 2005, you were probably seeing it on 35mm. But for the big blockbusters and the big epics and everything like that, they would oftentimes release movies in 70mm, which was basically a format which was twice as large as 35mm, which allowed for more resolution and a higher quality image. And also the big thing up until the 90s was... much better sound quality, you know, a quality which sort of rivals digital in a lot of ways. So Star Trek's 2 through 5, all released in 70mm. The only downside to 70mm is that the aspect ratio was slightly shorter than anamorphic widescreen. So instead of being 2.39:1, it's 2.2:1. So what you would have to do is crop just a little bit off the sides in order to get the image to fit on the entire frame. Sometimes they would letterbox it ever so slightly, but most of the time it was cropped. So if you saw a movie in 70mm, which was definitely the way that they would want you to see it because of all the other benefits, you were missing just a teensy tiny bit off the sides. Nothing that anyone would ever really notice or care about, but it was there.
Hmm.
So you could say that maybe the definitive original aspect ratios of those movies were 2.2 to 1 and not 2.39 to 1. However, I think it's clear that they composed it for 2.39 to 1, and that's how it should exist on these future formats.
Well, hold on. I thought that one of the earlier movies, 2 or 3, at least on home video, is a different aspect ratio.
Yeah. Oh, here's the dirty little secret about Star Trek movies on home video. They've pretty much always botched that. Going back to Laserdisc, and that was a big thing. Like with Laserdisc, you know, even though that was the best format in the history of video formats, it had some limitations in terms of quality. And people were watching them on TVs, which were much smaller than what we have now. And lots of times, whether with or without the filmmaker's consent, I think, there was a thing going on where whoever was doing the transfers would sometimes put the image up on the screen and say, "Wow, that's really small. Let's make that a little bit bigger." And they would, you know, basically crop it just a little bit in order to get that a few extra lines of resolution out of it and make it bigger. And Star Trek discs were kind of notorious for that. Two and three were okay. I think it was 4 had a few issues, and I think maybe the transfer for 4 was done earlier because that was one of the first movies which was released on VHS letterboxed. You could get like a special director's edition, and they actually had a thing on there explaining the letterboxing process, and they had like a tutorial sort of thing using the scene where they're all in the truck. The three of them are sitting in the truck, and they're like, "Here, in widescreen, you can see all three of them, but in this one, you can only see two. Pick two. Who's gonna lose?" You know. So I have a feeling that that's one of the reasons why I think it was 4 was slightly cropped.
But isn't there an aspect ratio shift at like the beginning of Star Trek 3? Like the Star Trek 2 one is in a different, in almost, I don't know, maybe it's 2:2 to 1. And then it like expands out just ever so slightly when the credits start.
Yeah. I don't know why they did that. It's weird. But yeah, there is a weird thing at the beginning there. And you would see things like that all the time, especially like involving credits and stuff like that. There'd be like lots of times you would see movies where the image would be slightly smaller and shrunk down to make sure that all of the credits would fit on the screen. And then once the movie started, it would expand out a little bit more. You would even see that on like 4x3 movies like Citizen Kane. The credits, there'd be like a little black border around the screen in order to accommodate that action safe and title safe area that that we were talking about before. And the Star Trek 3 thing, I don't remember exactly what it was, and I don't remember exactly why they did it, but it was a weird little anomaly. But not nearly as weird as the anomalies which exist in the various versions of Star Trek 6.
What?
Yeah. But that's a whole other thing, and perhaps we should hold off on that until next week.
Sounds like a good idea.
Okay.
Well, it was fun talking about the beginning of Star Trek aspect ratios today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I'm just going to say this up front. I don't know if it's Koenig or Koenig. I've heard both. I'm going to go with Koenig, but if I'm wrong, just pretend I said Koenig the whole time.
And I'll go with Koenig.
All right.
And then,
so our bases
and
are
then,
covered.
So we'll both, okay. Yes, all one right. Of us will be right.
Earl Grey.
They're like, "We're supposed to be decommissioned." And Kirk's like, "Second star to the right." And then like, what happens after that moment? They're like, they just start like.
5 minutes later, it's like, well.
I guess we have to turn around.
To the journey. To the journey is community. And that's what you find with Star Trek, and that's why we do what we do, and that's why we love it when you guys write us, find us on Twitter, and that's why we're all friends on Trek.fm, is because we have this sense of community, and that's what it brings. It's not just about a show, it's about each other. Warp 5.
Mm-hmm. Archer's way is the right way. He mm-hmm. brings the light. She mm-hmm. walks into the light to talk to Archer, because then she is enlightened, because he is an enlightened man. Mm-hmm. She walks back into the darkness and retreats back into her world to pick up the slates and go teach the mm-hmm. kids about the humans and the Skagarians and all that kind of stuff.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I think it would be fun, in order to prove my point, would be like to us have us play a game of Monopoly, and also two players entirely determined by randomness. Two fictional players. It would be Mike, Max, Blue, and Green.
Continuing mission.
When we made the audio drama, it was a fairly straightforward transition. Let's call the ship the Excelsior. Let's make it the fourth one to bear the name. Let's put it in the Delta Quadrant. But now that we're there, I'm really happy with a lot of those things.
Melodic Treks.
Second marriage took place in August the 6th, 1963, to Camille J. Williams, a Las Vegas dancer, and they had two children. And yes, I know, he divorced and married in the same year. I ain't gonna go anywhere near that. You draw your own conclusions.
Literary Treks.
I think I posited the idea that Lal was kidnapped, and Margaret just said in her Margaret E. way, she just said, Moriarty.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox, and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit www.trek.fm/podcasts to get all the links. We got some feedback from T-Pain. I doubt that it's the rapper, but it could very well be the rapper.
Yeah, I didn't realize that he was a Star Trek fan, but that's cool.
He says, I enjoyed your discussion of Michael Straczynski and Bruce Sable's reboot of the Star Trek universe. Most of their ideas were quite compelling, and particularly bringing in top-notch sci-fi and other writers in addition to staff writers. However, the worst and most anti-Star Trek idea they had was changing the Prime Directive from a non-interference directive to an ends justifies the means directive. It's hard to think of something that so fundamentally goes against the values of the Federation and indeed Star Trek itself. The Federation is not an empire. It does not force other species to be part of it or to interact with it. The Federation consists of voluntary members that respect the right of non-members to be left alone and to govern themselves as they see fit. I've always felt that there are many untold stories to tell in the Star Trek universe that explore the wisdom of the Prime Directive. Such stories would help Trek do what it does at its best, consider important issues that impact our world and time. Prime Directive is a principle that the USA should take to heart, given the disastrous history of the constantly intervening in countries and the great suffering it has caused the people of these countries and the people of the United States. Just a few examples: Iran in 1953, Vietnam in 61 to 75, Chile in 73, various interventions in Central America, a major reason for the child refugees now coming to our borders, Iraq, and Afghanistan.
Yeah, it's a good point. You know, I can understand how that might betray the values of Star Trek. I'm not really sure did they really have like a by any means necessary Prime Directive? I mean, I guess they kind of did state that.
What it said specifically was that as long they could do whatever they needed to do to get to the secret, the chase of the code behind life, the Prometheus.
I wonder how that would have played out in the series itself. Because I imagine they would have altered that.
Maybe instead of Kirk fighting the Prime Directive because he wants to change societies, maybe it would have been Kirk fighting the Prime Directive not wanting to change these societies.
Yeah, yeah.
Because that would be an interesting dynamic the other way around. Look, you have to do whatever it takes to find the answers to the life, the universe, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe there will be times where he's leaving people alone against Star Trek order or against Starfleet orders.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that.
I mean, I'm sure they would have thought of that. I imagine that would have been one of the first things to go. But if you would like to contact us and share your thoughts on today's show or any of our other shows, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the button on the left-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners in our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek.fm, where I do commentary Trek Stars with Max. And you can also find me on CommentaryTrekStars.com, where I do Off Topic with Max and Brandon. Or you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, D-O-U-B-L-E-O-F-I-V-E. And you can find me on various other places around the network. And don't forget that we're both going to be at Dragon Con August 31st.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of reviews in iTunes. The first one we'll read is, "Great discussion of the original and still the best," by Big Orange Michael. I wonder if he's from Tennessee. Go Big Orange. Sports. "Classic Trek is my favorite incarnation of Star Trek, and this podcast celebrates all the good, the bad, and the ugly of the series. Compelling conversation, intelligent discussion, and lots of opinions. Even if I disagree, I still find the conversation to be interesting, and it does what any good Trek podcast should do, give you a desire to visit the series again."
Thanks, Big Orange.
Go Big Orange Michael.
Yeah, we really appreciate that.
We've got another review here. "Can't live without my Trek FM," by A91R8H8. Okay.
I'm assuming that he's a droid, or she.
So that's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
"I've been listening to some of Trek FM's podcasts since early last year. I listen to them while I'm driving on my way to and from school. I find myself so engrossed in the conversation, and I wish I was there. The people who work on this podcast are real Trekkies slash Trekkers, too, making the conversation all the more interesting because of their knowledge of Star Trek lore." So thank you, A91R8H8.
Yeah, we appreciate
that. Lovely review.
Yeah. I'm glad we can entertain you on your way to school. That's cool. Hopefully we aren't swirling around in your head while you're trying to learn because, you know, that could be bad.
Yeah. "What's the aspect ratio of this chalkboard? Oh." Well, reviews are very important to us, not only because we like to hear what you think about the show, but because it helps impact how we place in iTunes and Stitcher. Reviews make it easier for other Star Trek fans to find our shows. We know that it does take some extra time to visit iTunes and Stitcher to write the reviews, so as an added incentive to share your thoughts on our show, we're giving away some great prizes as part of a month-long promotion. These include a season of Star Trek, Your Choice, on Blu-ray or DVD, an official Starships collection shipped from Japan, complete with Japanese magazines, Star Trek novels, and a full collection of our alien art badges. We've actually expanded the review promotion, and now it ends on midnight Pacific time, Sunday, August 17th. So there's still some times to get in some reviews. You got some extra time to fill out the form so that you can possibly win some of this cool stuff. We've even added a new giveaway item for those who reviewed the official Star Trek Axanar podcast. It's a set of three beautiful embroidered patches, compliment of Alex Peters and Axanar, which I'm jealous. I want a set.
Yeah, they look really cool.
Winners will be drawn at random from all entries received from before midnight Pacific time on August 17th. All you need to do to enter is leave us a rating and review on iTunes and or Stitcher. You can only leave one review per show, of course, but you can review multiple shows and do so on both iTunes and Stitcher. And for each review, you'll receive one entry in the drawing. Remember that you can also review the master feed, and that'll give you an entry as well. So there are two steps. Leave a review on iTunes and or Stitcher, and then visit www.trek.fm/review and complete the form.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
Yes. Totally worth it.
It's totally worth it. And we're totally jealous that we can't be part of it.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tacky to review your own show. So we're looking forward to hearing from you, and thank you for your support. Before we go, we'd also like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you every week. And that sponsor is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what choice do you have for everyone today?
Well, my book for today is called Before I Forget: Directing Television, 1948 to 1988, written and narrated by James Sheldon. It's 5 hours and 58 minutes, unabridged, and it says, "James Sheldon was directing the radio show We the People when it became the first commercial CBS network program to telecast nationally on June 1st, 1948. Since then, he has experienced the technological change from live to electronic tape to film, from black and white to color, from a few hundred thousand to the multi-millions of television sets in use today. His early live credits include dramatic series like Robert Montgomery Presents the Studio One, comedies like Mr. Peepers, and musicals like Don Ameche's Holiday Hotel. He was part of the move from New York to Los Angeles as television productions shifted west in the mid-50s. And I imagine he has a number of interesting stories to tell and probably gets into aspect ratios for at least like two or three chapters straight.
Yeah, two or three of those hours is probably just
all about aspect ratios. And you can get this book for free on Audible since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. So be sure to tune in next week when we continue our discussion on aspect ratios.
We'll finish up the franchise, we'll touch on the other things, but basically six and then the new movies, which have some very interesting aspect ratio stuff going on. The best is yet to come. We've laid the groundwork. You know, this was our Star Wars of aspect ratios. Next week is going to be our Empire Strikes Back of aspect ratios.
No pressure.
No.
So everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekhov, take us out of orbit, ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.